hadn't gotten that letter.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to I'd like to prepare a draft for you.
All right.
May I?
I wish you would.
I'd like to get a draft. I think that's an awfully good avenue to make another expression on your part.
Yeah.
No, I've made expressions, need another. These kids are not bad kids. This is not the new left system. These kids are the more responsible leaders of the student community. And I read their letter, there are things you disagree with in the letter. But it's a respectful letter. It's not one of these vituperative, ill-considered things. And I do believe that this gives a very good opportunity for you to make a statement in this area, which will have its impact among the young people. And I think it ought to be done. I think their letter ought not to be disregarded. And I think a very, very friendly, positive, firm statement can be made on the subject. And I think it ought to be made.
What do you think you ought to say?
Well, I would state, like Baltimore, what I'm really talking about is a restatement of what you said in Baltimore, kind of bringing it up to date, and point out, I discover one thing, and you know this too from your lifelong experience, that you need repetition. And very often when you say the same thing, it sounds new and fresh, but hasn't been said for a while. And all I would repeat, but I would suggest some ways to do it. Because I think that letter, unlike some others that I can think of, warrants a reply on your part. As I said, I regarded the letter to be a respectful letter. It did not exude animus. It had a lot of misconceptions. But you expect misconceptions.
What were their misconceptions?
You know, they're youngsters. They haven't gone through the mill, and they don't know what life is. They're just on the beginning of it. So that if you're agreeable, I'll get up a draft.
Good.
While I am here today.
Good. I wish you would.
And send it down to you, and you do it what you want. But I really believe, and I would like to urge that you reply to me.
Good. Get it up and get it over to Rosto today, and we'll get on the ticker.
And
what do you think we ought to say, just in effect that we are anxious for a ceasefire? We'll go anywhere to talk. We want to take our...
You are first for a ceasefire. If you're ready to have a ceasefire come about, you're looking for a peaceful settlement, you have no desire to overthrow the Northern, what you said many times, people in the North, all you want them to do is leave the people in the South alone, that the people in the South are entitled, as a matter of humanity, to lead a peaceful life, and that there are casualties, but there are casualties on all sides of this, and every casualty is to be regretted, casualties in the South as well as the North, that you have gone and are willing to go the extra mile to bring about a peaceful resolution. You are not willing to let the people of the South be sacrificed. They're a friendly country. They're recognized by 60 nations of the world as a sovereign power. That the Geneva Accord went so far as to prevent the introduction of a single civilian after a single armed man passed the demilitarized zone. You have tried to get even the demilitarized zone neutralized without success. That you're going to, what you said, that you, under great provocation, exercise restraint, you're going to continue to exercise restraint. You have no more fervent desire than what you said in Manila to bring every American there back home. That the question of the inequities of the draft law, which was that's why you set up your commission. Matter of urgent study. And we appreciate their good motives because they're the beneficiaries of the inequity in the draft law.
I think you might say that sometimes you see these things in a little different perspective from different observation points, but that suffice it to say, we are concerned with opinions, and we are very concerned with opinions of young people and responsible young people as they appear to be, and that they have influence with us. Kind of take the Russian line that they have influence with North Vietnam. You young people have influence with us. And we are, as you are, concerned with casualties, and we are anxious for a ceasefire, and we are anxious for talks, and we are anxious to take the money that we spend on bullets and bombs and spend on bread. And you have our assurance that we agree with you on all these things. Now, if you can influence your counterparts in some way, or if you can get this message over, we can't do it by ourselves, not a one-way street, but if they will meet us just part of the way, well, you can take our assurance that we'll be there.
Right. That's very good. I'll try to draft something, but I think that this group I would respond to. Because these are the editors of the paper, and these are not, as I said, part of the fact of noisy new left fellows. These are the more responsible campus leaders. And as I said, while I didn't agree with everything in the letter, my long shot, I was impressed with the respectful tone of the letter. And when youngsters are mature enough to address the president in respectful terms, in an era where there seems to be diminishing respect for everything, I think they ought to be encouraged by a dialogue with them. And I think it also affords a kind of a good forum for you to express what you have expressed in the past, but bring it up to date. And much better than some of the other ones.
How do you feel about the budget?
Well, you know, I told you how I felt about it. I'd like you to come up with a goddamn fighting speech, not a conciliatory. I'd like you to do a little Harry Truman. Now, you probably don't agree with that. I think you ought to come out and you ought to say you're not going to repeat an issue in the great society. Our America has great unmet needs. We have the resources to eliminate these pockets. And they're only pockets. The great affluent society. And that you as president are going to do it. And you're not going to be deterred. And you're going to ask the Congress.
What do you think about the tax bill?
I'd have taxes to finance. At the same time, I would also say that I'm going to take the water out of the government wherever there is water, and there is water. I'm going to squeeze it out. But I'm not going to prevent children from being educated, and I'm going to get rid of their literacy, and I'm going to retrain any man who can't get a job because he's not trained. And I'm going to rebuild our cities. And I expect the theme of my thought to you would be the theme would be a real surprise of all with a real fighting speech. And you expect the Congress to support you. I think the time is... You remember what old Justice Holmes told Franklin Roosevelt when Holmes called on Roosevelt? Recall that story?
No.
Well, when President Roosevelt came to Washington to that's about things that you and I are familiar with. Many people have forgotten, but our country was in great trouble. He started to launch the New Deal. He got under attack by all the elements that don't like progress. He went to see the old justice, who was retired and was then 91. And the old man drew himself up when the President of the United States came in, although he was fairly bedridden, but he got erect, he got on his feet, he stood up. And Roosevelt asked the Holmes for some advice. And Mr. Holmes said, "Look, Mr. President, I fought in the Civil War. I learned one lesson. That when the enemy is after you, you launch an attack. You don't wait to get it in the chin. Well, my advice to you is carry the fight to the enemy. Don't let the enemy carry the fight to you." And I believe that's sound. I believe it's sound economics, and I believe it's sound politics. I think today a lot of the doubts and the hesitations, the cynicisms and all of that would vanish. You would just dig in. You're committed to these programs. You believe in them. You launch them. And dig in and say, we got to fight a war. We're going to fight it. But we're going to overcome at the same time all of these troubles with our own country. And rather than give an inch, now the papers are filled. I don't know whether you've been reading them. I've been reading them while I'm in the country here. The papers are filled with these stories. This program is shut down, and that program is shut down, and Sergeant Shriver's outfit is falling apart, has no morale, and that the Great Society program is going down the drain. Well, I confound all these critics by telling them that you don't retreat an inch on these great ideas and facts. You're going to propose to beat them up. And I tax the American people to do it. Everybody can afford to pay a few pennies more and has the moral obligation to pay a few pennies more to maintain our foreign policy and to advance our domestic economy. Nobody in this country, except a very small percentage of the 5 people, is suffering. Everybody's had it better than ever would be conceived 30 years ago in the lifetime of any of us. More kids are in school, more youngsters are going to college, there's better prosperity in every worker's home. I don't care what they may cry about and say that the cost of living took away their wages. There isn't an industrial worker in America employed who isn't far better off than he ever dreamed he would be. And he knows it, whatever his complaints may be. But I would not make a conciliatory budget or a conciliatory speech. I'd come out there fighting. And the American people support that, in my opinion. And I'd put the Republicans in a defensive position. They're now feeling cocky because they want a few votes. They always win in this type of thing.
How much would you put in for poverty? We put in 800 million last year. We put in 1.6 billion this year.
What are they asking for?
Well, they ask. I heard them. They, John Gardner and the Bill Works and all of them have got their own individual programs. The news of it is we got 2 million more people working on payroll this year than we had January the 1st last year. That's number one. Number two, I've now spent $9 billion of the federal budget for poor people in 60. Kennedy spent $12 billion in 63. We will spend $22 billion in 66. I plan to ask the Congress to approve about $25 billion in 67. It will be divided between education and health, social security, and the poor. Just for the poor. That's for those under 3,000 income. We have reduced it from 40 million in 1960 who had incomes under $3,000 to about $32 billion now, and we propose to reduce it to another $1.5 billion this year.
Some things become symbolic.
Well, we've got 2.5 million people that in the last 5 months have had medical care that they never had before. We've got 9 million people that have been brought under minimum wage that were never brought before. We gave them a 7% increase to Social Security last year. We're planning to more than double that this year again. We are spending about $10 billion more on health and education this year than we did when I became a president. The elementary educational bill has got